The pristine natural beauty of Yosemite National Park attracts thousands of visitors a year. But most people fail to realize how this stunning natural wonder fits into the biblical history of the Genesis flood. Stay tuned.
These landscapes, these rocks, show me where this demands a time scale of billions of years, because we don't see it.
This is Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal. I'm Chris O'Brien with the Institute for Creation Research. The serene environment of Yosemite is complete with towering rocks, peaceful meadows, thundering waterfalls, stately evergreens, and abundant wildlife. But did this place of awesome beauty and tranquility originate hundreds of millions of years ago? Or did it shake with fury some 4,000 years ago, when the great global flood violently altered the face of the earth? Join us, won't you, for the next 15 minutes as we discuss the effects that Noah's flood and the subsequent ice age had on Yosemite National Park in Central California. We'll also talk about other places of interest in the east central area of the state, including Death Valley and the White Mountains. ICR geologist Bill Hoche says that the geologic processes that happened at Yosemite and Death Valley testify of a recent creation and a catastrophic global flood.
We would challenge the secular mind to say, show me where these landscapes, these rocks, this beautiful scenery we're driving through, show me where this demands a time scale of billions of years, because we don't see it. We think these rocks scream out catastrophe and rapid change.
So just what kind of evidence are geologists looking at in Yosemite that is consistent with a biblical record of a global flood? One evidence they're studying is the action of plate tectonics.
When geologists use the word tectonics, they're referring to mountain ranges on a large scale that have been crumpled, faulted, sliced by activity in the Earth's crust, including uplift of mountains and so on. This is the realm of Dr. John Baumgartner. He's a geophysicist who's actually a leading expert on plate tectonics.
In fact, Dr. Baumgartner is the creator of a computerized model of plate tectonic movements. This model is called TERRA and has been used both by creation and secular geologists. Dr. Baumgartner says many things conspired together to produce the beauty we see in Yosemite National Park, but says plate tectonic activity during the Genesis flood played a major role in creating the landscape.
The main thing that happened was the subduction of a large oceanic plate beneath the west coast of North America. Rapid subduction, moving at many miles per hour under the western coast of North America during the flood. And as this plate reached a depth of roughly 80 miles, the sediment that was being carried down on the top of the plate melted because the plate was moving so rapidly. And as a result, there was quite a bit of sediment being carried down. When this melted sediment rose, it formed big blobs of molten rock that rose up, penetrated the overlying crust, which is now Eastern California, and produced massive balloon-shaped masses of granite. And later in the flood, the rock on top of the granite was washed away, and these big blobs of granite rose up, and the Sierra Nevada mountains were carved out of this granite.
Bill Hoche.
Most people realize that the Sierras are composed predominantly of a lot of granite. And the question of how granite forms, did it form slowly and gradually over millions of years, or did it happen suddenly and radically? Granite represents rock. Of course, it's solid rock today, but it was once magma. It was once at least partially molten, and this molten material rose up through the Earth's crust, we think in connection with radical plate movements that were going on during the flood, and this magma emplaced itself in sedimentary rock that contains marine fossils. And so therefore we think this is something that happened subsequent to at least the early part of the flood, when these sedimentary rock layers were formed. So we're talking about major changes in the Earth's crust during the flood, and that the landscape that we walk around in today is just a distant reminder of something radical that happened in the past.
And, in connection with flood plate tectonic activity at Yosemite, Bill Hoesch believes massive volcanoes erupted in the Sierra Nevadas with a widespread effect over hundreds of miles.
A research interest of my own has to do with volcanoes and supervolcanoes that have occurred in the region. I have an interest in the dinosaur-bearing layer in Utah and in the greater Intermountain West called the Morrison Formation. And this is one of your famous dinosaur storehouses in the West. And these dinosaurs, it's fascinating to me because an understated thing about this is that they're buried in a huge blanket of volcanic ash. We're talking about 15,000 cubic kilometers of volcanic ash. Where did all that stuff come from? All the evidence points to the Sierras, points to evidence of supervolcanoes that have erupted in the past, we think during the flood, in association with the emplacement of these granitic plutons, we call them. There were supervolcanoes that were obviously erupting somewhere in that greater Sierra region that supplied the ash that buried the dinosaurs, and we can look at those layers today.
But even after the dramatic and fierce process of plate subductions and violent supervolcanoes was passed, the transformation of Yosemite wasn't finished yet. Another great effect of the flood occurred, shaping and renovating the masses of granite into the beauty we see in and around Yosemite today. Dr. Baumgartner explains.
During the Ice Age after the flood, large glaciers came down from the peaks of these mountains and carved out the valleys and sculpted the rock even more. And almost all the rock around Yosemite Village has been sculpted significantly by glacial ice.
Bill Hoesch.
Even though we can't see the ice there today, it's perfectly obvious. You can see scour marks in the valley bottom, and you can see that characteristic U-shaped valley with stranded waterfalls and things like that, that testify that something radically different than present-day processes formed it. And it's quite obvious that there were glaciers. And it's an interest of Dr. Larry Vardaman, long-standing interest, to connect a post-flood ice age with the formation of landscapes just like that. And it really does work hand in glove very well.
It comes as no surprise that creationists and evolutionists disagree as to the timing and cause of the Ice Age. Many creationists will affirm that the Ice Age came about in the aftermath of Noah's flood and only lasted a few hundred to a thousand years.
We're looking at a post-flood Ice Age sometime after the flood, perhaps 4,000 years ago, something on that order. And when we use the term Ice Age, we're not referring to a span of time hundreds of thousands of years old, but perhaps only on the order of 1,000 years, and perhaps something that was going on during the time of Abraham, something of that sort.
Yosemite is indeed a place of extraordinary beauty and wonder. But another fascinating place, in stark contrast to the beauty of Yosemite, is Death Valley, located in East Central California. Bill Hoesch points out some interesting things about this special place.
Death Valley, of course, is a unique part in North America. It's the lowest point in North America, well below sea level. And from Death Valley, you can almost see the Sierras from there, which are 14,000 feet above sea level. The bottom of Death Valley is fascinating because it shows evidence of water everywhere, evidence of moving water, even though it's so extraordinarily stark and dry today. So it's fascinating, not only for geologists thinking about moving sediment and evidence for water, but also for biologists and how organisms can survive in such extremes.
ICR's academic dean and biology department chairman, Dr. Ken Cummings, says even though the plants in Death Valley must endure a dry, hostile environment, they were amazingly created with the ability to adapt to this extreme land.
What's interesting about these associations are that with the small amount of rain that come to these basins, such as we find in Death Valley, the water runs off into a basin, but then when it gets into this basin, it evaporates under the summer heat, and then there's nothing left but alkaline wash then, the salt residue. And yet the plants can survive in this location. And we were down to some of the little potholes of very salty water in the Death Valley where we could see plants thriving in this location. They have adaptations to be able to get rid of this extra salt and to avoid the effects of very high temperatures, which desiccate and also destroy the tissues in the plants.
North of Death Valley, along the California-Nevada border, are the White Mountains. This is the home to the ancient bristlecone pine trees. The most famous tree there is called Methuselah and is considered to be the oldest living tree on Earth. Dr. Cummings says although this environment is much different than Death Valley, these plants also have their challenges.
This is a very high elevation with alkaline soils all around, and they thrive very well there, even in this very harsh element. The winds are very strong, the temperatures get down very cold, and the competition for moisture and place under the sun is quite severe under these conditions. But the bristlecone pine is very successful at adapting to this location. And as we've seen in the literature, they have survived there for long periods of time, say over 4,000 years, according to the tree ring data.
Although there's no doubt that the bristlecone pines of the White Mountains are ancient, finding their exact age may have become a bit of a challenge.
In more recent time, it's been learned that the dating of these rings may have a problem in the sense that there could be more than one ring formed in a year, according to the nature of the moisture, the rainfall, and the temperature regime for that particular year. So the question of how old are these trees in actuality? Well, they're thousands of years old, but trying to ascribe a fixed, precise date is not well known. They have been counted, the rings, and they have assigned them particular ages, such as the Methuselah tree. But once again, one has to be concerned that some of the rings might not be strictly annular. They could be intermittent growth rings during the course of a year. There have been studies to try to test this, growing them in the laboratory, and we find that the laboratory conditions can be varied, in which case you can get more than one ring in the course of a year.
Yosemite, Death Valley, and the White Mountains, although diverse from one another, are all places of unique beauty and wonder. However, Bill Hoesch reminds us that all this grandeur is a result of God's past judgment.
When we look at the granites of Yosemite, when we look at the work of Ice Age glaciers, when we look at these records of bristlecone pines and so forth, and think of it in terms of a compressed time scale on the biblical time frame, which is utterly reasonable, we have to think in terms of the global flood. And when we think of a global flood, we think of judgment. And when I think of judgment, I think of the judgment that Christ bore on my behalf on the cross. He who knew no sin became sin on my behalf, that I might become the righteousness of God in him. That's good news to someone who's lost. Things like these rocks, like this region, remind me of this kind of judgment that was paid on my behalf. I think about that when I think of the rocks and the scenery of a place like Yosemite.
If you'd like to learn more about Yosemite, Death Valley, and the White Mountains, why not consider joining ICR this fall on our brand new Yosemite Death Valley Adventure Tour? To learn more about it, go to our website at icr.org. You know, most people aren't aware that today there are thousands of scientists that are convinced of the truth of biblical creation and not evolution. Our non-denominational ministry aims to restore and strengthen the Genesis foundations of the Christian faith. If you've enjoyed today's edition of Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal, why not visit us on the web to find out more about the work of ICR? The address is www.icr.org. Again, www.icr.org. Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal, is a production of ICR. For the Institute for Creation Research, I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.